such a bad case of the clap from the girls over to Miss Carlotta's Purple Garter Sporting Palace. I thought the pony drip was gonna burn a hole right through my long handles.
Riding ahead of the jail wagon, moving over a rutted two-track trail, the town constable of Buffalo Flats, Neil Ardye, looked over his shoulder at the two deputy U.S. Marshals slouched in the wagon's driver's box.
And you won't know the kicker, huh?
What's the kicker, Neil?
The younger of the two federal lawmen, Chuck Svensson, skidded his wary gaze back and forth across the rising and falling trail winding between low pine-clad slopes.
My wife never even had a clue.
The older marshal, sitting on the left side of the seat, holding the leather ribbons loose in his gloved hands, shook his head.
You and the missus must have a real close relationship, Neil. That's heartwarming as all hell.
Ardye turned forward in the saddle of his cream-maned vinegar dun and raised an arm to sleeve tears from his cheeks.
Oh, you know Lucy Ann, Bill. Girl didn't weigh 100 pounds when I married her. She was as sweet as a dish full of chocolate fudge. Now, only 2 years after our big church wedding, she's put on more tallow than a she-buff in January, and she grew herself a nice, long, forked tail to go with her ass and tongue. I swear that girl so much as turns a glance on a rose, it turns black, tumbles off the vine, goes up in a puff of smoke.
Jesus Christ! You don't suppose her and my wife are kin, do you, Neil?
Hey, Neil. You sure this is the way to the cutoff you were talking about? I don't see no way through the ridge over yonder, let alone across that stream.
Oh, not to worry, Chuck. I used to cut off all the time when I go looking for deer or grizz. You won't see it till you're right up on top of it. And that's the beauty of the thing. If you two can make it through that first gap in this here old wagon...
The constable threw up a hand and looked again over his shoulder, his eyes wide and earnest.
And I ain't saying you can, as I never tried to take a wagon through there, just a saddle horse. But you can make it. No one shading your trail will ever follow you through that cutoff. If they're not from around here, they won't know about it. The only reason I know about that...
I don't mean to sound impatient, but shouldn't we have come upon it by now?
Lander shook his head.
Don't mind him, Neil. Chuck here's convinced someone's shading us, though I ain't seen nothing but dust devils fogging our trail since we left Cody. While my eyes might be 11 years older than his, I can see twice as far and smell cutthroats from 2 miles away downwind.
You yourself are smelly enough to choke a cur off a gut wagon. You didn't see the group in the Buffalo Flat Saloon like I did when I went in for the whiskey and sandwiches. There were 5 of the sons of bitches. They all look like cold steel artists.
Svensson jerked a thick brown thumb over his shoulder.
Friends of one or more of these bastards behind us, I say.
Friends of one or more of us. You got that right, Chuck.
Gritting his teeth, Svensson turned and rammed the back of a clenched fist against the front wall of the welded strap iron cage. He glared at the lanky Texas-born regulator and bank robber, a bizarre-looking cuss with sinister Nordic features, complete with high, tapering cheekbones and slanted, snake-like eyes. 4 gold front teeth glistened on his upper jaw. Long silver hair hung straight down from his black bowler hat to the shoulders of his dusty frock coat. Though born in Texas, the 38-year-old outlaw had acquired the Colorado handle because, according to legend, he'd robbed more banks and killed more men in that territory than any other white man in frontier history. On the back of one hand, King had tattooed a running rabbit with a horrified look in its eye. On the back of his other hand was a plunging hawk, wings and talons out, beak open, ready to rip and tear.
I done told you to address me as Marshal Svensson, Bob. Keep your goddamn voice down, or I'll come back there and smash your head like a ripe melon.
You keep threatening.
Colorado Bob rested an arm on one upraised knee while he swayed easily with the wagon's pitch and lurch, his gold teeth flashing in the afternoon sunshine angling through the pine tops.
And me? I just keep right on quivering, shaking right down to my boot toes.
He narrowed his slanted eyes at Svensson with an even more sinister air than usual. The others sitting or lying in the bed of the wagon around him, Frank Blackburn and Brush Sims, stared at Svensson. Fuego seemed customarily ensconced in his own crazy head. The scalped, one-eared half-breed merely lay, bare-chested, on his wadded-up shirt and jacket, grinning at the sky as if thoroughly enjoying the story he read in the clouds.
God damn it!
Svensson reached under the driver's seat for his 12-gauge shotgun.
That seals it. Bill, stop the wagon. Pull your horns in there, deputy. You ain't gonna do no such thing. You keep letting those crazy bastards bait you into their wolf trap, you'll get your head chopped off. Now put that greener back under the seat and wipe the spit off your chin. You're a professional, goddammit. Act like one.
That's what I've always said.
Frank Blackburn leaned against the back of the wagon.
A professional man like yourself there, Chuck, should at least act like one.
Blackburn was a muscular, almost midget-sized hard case in his mid-20s, with short blonde hair under the funnel-brimmed hat secured beneath his chin with a horsehair thong. His stout arms, sleeves rolled up above his bulging biceps, were crossed on his broad chest, and his short, muscular legs jutted in front of him, his hand-tooled calfskin boots crossed at the ankles.
I'll act however I feel like acting.
Svensson gave the man a hard, sidelong look through the bars behind him.
And if you got men coming to try to spring you, Blackburn, you'll see how I act when the chips are down. Comprende, amigo?
Save the Mex talk for Fuego.
Blackburn glanced at the Mexican lying beside him, still staring dreamily at the puffy summer clouds, as though he were a kid lounging in a treehouse.
Yep, this is the place, fellas.
Where?
Lander stared through the scattered poplars lining the stream, which curled along the base of a rocky sandstone ridge.
That's the beauty of it. You still can't see it, can you?
Ardye glanced over his shoulder.
Bill, the bank drops around that next bend. You follow me down to the river. You'll see a rocky ford through the trees, and that's where we cross the stream.
Ardye gigged his horse into a jog ahead. When Landers and Svensson rounded the bend, they dropped down the shallow bank and rolled out across the riverbed, through a gap in the poplars lining the stream. The water flattened and widened as it slid over a rocky ford, a foot deep at the deepest, Bill Landers thought as he surveyed the crossing. Riding ahead, Ardye directed the marshals around trouble spots. Ahead, the marshal saw no passage through the sheer stone ridge on the other side of the stream until they pulled the wagon up the opposite bank and followed Ardye ahead and left. They swerved around junipers, cedars, and huge cracked boulders fallen from the ridges. When they were 100 feet from the base of the southwestern cliff, a long vertical shadow appeared in the high, pocked and crenellated stone wall. Landers watched the shadow darken and widen before him. Suddenly, the wall seemed to split, and as though a door opened and pulled back to the left, the opening in the canyon wall yawned, only about 50 feet wide and littered with brush and rocks, but an opening just the same, large enough for the wagon. Ardye led them farther through the gap and down a twisting canyon that narrowed to little wider than the wagon's rear wheels in places. 5 minutes later, the canyon opened until it was nearly as wide as the one they'd just left, and threaded with a trickling feeder stream.
Yep, should be smooth sailing from here on.
Ardye rose proudly in his stirrups and surveyed the terrain ahead, which was slowly filling with early evening shadows.
At least for as far as I've taken this canyon, right down the middle of the Mexicans.
This meets up with the Cheyenne River?
Svensson stood in the stopped wagon's box, resting his shotgun over his shoulder to look over the cut.
Well, it forks and dog legs. You stay to the west. When you see Sleeping Bear Butte, you're going to recognize it on the right side of the canyon. Hang a left. You should meet up with the Cheyenne in about 2 days. Only take you about 2 more after that to reach Crow Feather.
Ardye reined the dun around to head back toward the wagon.
Well, I best get back to Buff Flat. Keep an eye on the drunks I have in lockup. Happy sailing, fellas. If I see any hombres looking like they're shading you... Ain't gonna be shading you for long.
Much obliged, Neil.
Landers reached under his seat for a canteen, while Svensson continued standing and running his eyes along the rocky, fir and pine-stippled ridges humping around him.
I'll thank you too, Neil, if we don't get so lost even the devil can't find us.